Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. My very special guests today, who are going to be revealing some very, shall we say, trippy information, if you will, and a in-depth analysis on the production of LSD and the connections between the CIA and other propagandistic platforms, including the counterculture, and how all of these wonderful mega bands and counterculture scenarios were in fact a created and contrived way to change society and to mold our morals into a vision far more befitting the elite who dominate society and wish it to be different. And in my opinion, a lot worse. Jan Irvin, Joe Atwell, welcome to the program, gentlemen.
Good to be
here. Thank you for having us on.
So where would you like to kick off? Because the history of the introduction of LSD into culture, I think, is probably a good place to start, and how it actually came about, who invented it, and so on and so forth. Who would like to take that?
Jan should take that.
Who invented LSD? Is that what you asked?
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's a really good place to kick it off, actually, because the typical story is that Albert Hofmann invented LSD originally in 1938, and then he discovered its properties in 1943. But in this July coming up, a researcher that I know out of England, Alan Piper, he's just about to release a new article in the journal Time and Mind that exposes that in a novel by Leo Perutz, published in 1933, which is 5 years before Hofmann supposedly invented it and 10 years before he tested it. In this novel, they're discussing using a drug that's not found in nature, such as LSA would be from ergot, but they're going to extract this drug from this ergot from wheat, and they're going to create a hallucinogen that's going to then cause a return of religious belief and a return in a Roman emperor to his throne, but it inadvertently ends instead in a communist rebellion. And so, but this is all detailed out, you know, 10 years before Hofmann's supposed discovery. And even in this book, they're doing secret tests on unwitting civilians.
Yeah, I would just add that once Gordon Wasson's story about his discovery of the psilocybin mushroom and its effect in Mexico, once that falls apart, and it has fallen apart, believe me, then the whole story of LSD as the public has been given it has to be questioned. And Perutz's book is, in my opinion, simply expressing an awareness of a drug that has already been well understood by the oligarchs, and they have a particular intention for it. And I think that as we go forward through the evidence that is presented in the paper that was released 2 days ago on Gnostic Media website, as we go through the evidence, people will be able to see very clearly that what we're looking at is, without question, an attempt to use the drug as part of a general cultural debasement. In other words, that the oligarchs had the idea that they would create a second neo-feudalism. And so to do that, they started to look for ways to mentally debase, to put into a state where they can't really think clearly, this, you know, the group of people that they want to control.
How exactly can a hallucinogen like LSD be used to control people? Apparently, it has been used in mind control programs such as MKUltra, hasn't it?
Sure. Well, you know, it can actually be used in a number of different ways, such as using it for, you know, they were attempting it as a truth serum and to cause personality splitting or multiple personality syndrome, such as I've recently discussed with Dr. Colin Ross, who's an expert on MKUltra. But another thing that they use it for is to essentially, and it's a multi-pronged attack in this sense, it's to debase the thinking abilities of the young. So, you know, last year on your show, you had me on and we discussed the Trivium. Well, the Trivium is a very important tool for people to be able to think clearly and critically and spot when somebody's trying to fool them. Well, you take a lot of kids through the compulsory education system where they're not taught any critical thinking and they're not provided logical fallacies or anything, and then you give them a drug and you tell them it's spiritual and you don't warn them of any of the negatives, that it's all just positive. And essentially you shroud it around New Age religious beliefs and this notion that's come up around quantum physics, that there is no truth in the world, the truth is arbitrary, and it's essentially just a full-on attack on the intellect of these kids. And so, you know, rather than focusing on things that they can verify and fact check, they'll say, well, there is no truth. I might as well not even bother. You know, let's just be positive. Let's positive think, this sort of thing. When that's, you know, the general goal is to get people just not to look and just, you know, to kill the messenger, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I would add, just to give a short answer to Vinny's question, that if you want to see how it can be used, just look at Woodstock. That's just couldn't be clearer. You have LSD being used and other hallucinogenics in a completely culturally debased environment. If you just look at what the mental activity of the participants was like, they were pretty much able to be led anywhere by anybody. They simply had lost, you know, moral and intellectual perspective. It isn't just the drugs, it's also the music. If you look at the paper we wrote, we show that all of the components that you could see, for example, in the Sunset Strip, which was one of the progenitor regions of the what is called the Archaic Revival, all of these elements, the music idol, electronic music, psychedelic drugs, just go on and on. All of these elements had been slowly placed into culture by a very few people. And, just to recap, a number of people had noticed this odd connection between the original music idols and military intelligence. Jim Morrison's father was the admiral in charge of the false flag episode at the Gulf of Tonkin that led to the Vietnam War. Frank Zappa's father was a very high-level chemical weapons engineer. Just goes on and on. Everyone involved that in this scene, and this is research that was done by a gentleman named Dave McGowan that I would hope people pay attention to, because he really shows very clearly that there was this connection. And so that there was then the suspicion that MKUltra, which was the CIA's mind control project, had been in back of this somehow. And it's because MKUltra had all of this LSD experimentation going on. And there was people who were making this connection between MKUltra and this the rock scene that was in the Sunset Strip and in, that was manifested Woodstock. So that was the question. And then one energetic research, Jan sitting with us, he actually found the primary documents. He actually found, these aren't circumstantial evidence. I mean, these are CIA internal documents that show that Wasson's entire trip to Mexico was a CIA MKUltra project. And so...
Subproject 58.
Subproject 58. And so at this point, the pattern that has been developed by a lot of other researchers who have been very worried about the connection between military intelligence, the CIA, and the counterculture that appeared in the 1960s, at this point, once Jan had made these discoveries, the evidence simply as a case you could take to a court of law became just overwhelming, in my opinion. And so the article that we wrote was, we aren't accusing anyone. What we're saying is the evidence is very strong, and we're asking that scholars and the public, because there has to be a lot of other people who have pieces of this puzzle, come forward and attempt to, fill out all of the patterns so that the public can be completely aware that this occurred. I don't think that we're interested in having a government investigation, because that would be absurd. If the government was in back of this project, then the government isn't what we think it is. It's not.
It's like appointing, and it's still going, for that matter.
Right. And so we just feel that there's enough evidence here. Now that there is active in the discovery of a primary document, an actual document saying that the trips that Wasson made to Mexico, which were the subject of the Life magazine article, if you trace this back, and again, this you can do through going to Gnostic Media and looking at Jan's work, that the Life magazine article that brought Wasson's experimentation with psilocybin to the public, that was the absolute progenitor. That was the absolute ground zero of the psychedelics getting into our culture. And
well,
now
let me just interject. Yeah. There's one more pivotal instance, which was one of Wasson's friends, Aldous Huxley, who worked with Wasson at the CIA Century Club, that we just found an audio recording of to prove that. And so Aldous Huxley writes his book, The Doors of Perception, and he's also writing about this idea of Soma in his book, Brave New World, to dumb down the masses. So enter Wasson, and then, you know, he and Wasson together, working together at the Century Club, are apparently orchestrating this entire thing together with Alan Dulles, John Foster Dulles, Dwight D. Eisenhower, all of these other characters are there at the Century Club as well.
Now, can I ask, what is the stated intention? You talked about the primary documentation behind Wasson's sub-project 58. Was there an outline or an intention behind the project? What exactly were they wishing to accomplish by sending him down to Mexico to trip out?
I believe that it was simply to create a plausible narrative to put into the Life magazine story. I mean, I think at that point they had already had LSD. They didn't need to research psilocybin to any extent. They, if you look at the Life magazine cover, that Gordon Wasson's story is described in, you'll see that on the cover, underneath the description of Wasson's incredible visions on magic mushrooms, they have an article they call Teenage Allowances. And I think this is wit. I think this is humor. I think that they had exactly in mind what occurred. In other words, they were going to create music idols. They were going to create overpowering electronic music. They were going to give LSD to as many people as possible. And they had evidence, because they had done all of this research on the effects of LSD, they thought at that point that individuals would be essentially very easy to take off a cultural cliff, that from you know, rock and roll music and LSD and free sex, that at that point the philosophies that they were hoping that the teenagers would pick up would be simply irresistible, because they would be given to them by their rock idols, who would be telling them to tune on, turn in, and drop out.
Rock idol, I should say, is pretty ironic in itself, because when you think of, they're trying to return this return of pagan or dark age beliefs, and then you think of rock idols, right? Then suddenly the rock idol of the music industry has a whole other layer or connotation. Right. To it.
The rock idol and, of the primitive religion. You know?
Sure. And, yeah. And I just want to say here before I forget, is that what the CIA had also done to lead researchers astray was they had actually slipped another narrative into the story of another CIA agent. And all of these guys were CIA, Alan Richardson, Gordon Wasson, a couple of these other guys. But they slipped the storyline of James Moore, the CIA agent who, unannounced to Wasson, was secretly, CIA and got Wasson the money, when in fact we have the letters from Wasson writing to this fund to get the money. We have letters between Alan Dulles and Gordon Wasson. Alan Dulles was the head of the CIA. And we have all of these primary documents. So, we know, just like when I wrote in my article last year, Gordon Wasson, the man, the legend, the myth, This James Moore guy, yes, he was CIA, but they were all CIA. He's just a scapegoat. What they did was they decided to vet him to protect the larger operation. So they exposed him to lead everybody just off on a wild goose chase.
Yeah, they didn't want the suspicion to come about that there was a clear agenda being hidden, and because they thought they could protect Wasson's identity as a MK Ultra Subproject 58 member operative, they hoped that it would just stop there with their disclosures about Moore, who was the botanist that Wasson brought along on the trip. But the fact is, they didn't need the chemist, and the agenda is very clear.
Okay, Joseph Antwell and Jan Irvin are my guests. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know.
We don't know. All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
So we're back with Vinny's show here, and Vinny has lost the connection, and the station is saying for us to continue. And since I host my own show at Gnostic Media, I thought I would pick up the slack here while they get Vinny back. And so in the meantime, Joe and I were discussing our recent article, Manufacturing the Deadhead, a Product of Social Engineering. And we had just finished discussing the CIA cover story about James Moore, and we had gone on break. And so, Joe, do you want to pick up the next segment there?
Yeah. The basic question is motivation. What did they have in mind? And I think it is the dropout concept that Tim Leary put forward that was really, what they were hoping to achieve.
I just had a tune in, turn on, and Skype dropout.
Yeah, we had you covered, no problem there. Joe's actually just going on, so you might as well just let him continue. And then jump right in.
Well, before he does, I was just going to say, it's almost pointless me being here, because we're just going to be listening to you fellas the whole time with your research.
Oh, well, that's okay. You can interject with your questions about the article and whatnot.
No, actually, it's quite interesting, Vinny, because as the information comes out, I do appreciate getting people's responses. And, you know, this is very interesting information. It gives a different understanding of our culture than people have had previous. And so it's something that everyone should be able to manifest a strong reaction to. And I look forward to hearing yours on it. I was just going to finish up saying that if you look at the kind of communes that, you know, were in favor during the late 1960s, Tim Leary in the houseboat exchange he did with Allen Ginsberg and Gary Snyder and a few other of the gurus, they talk about hundreds of groups from cities leaving and setting up these kind of organizations. And they were really just mentally debased setups where there was lots of drug use, very primitive kind of planting. I was on some of them. I actually visited friends on these things. And I can just tell you that it was really, you know, a kind of a mental and cultural and moral cul-de-sac. And a lot of people, because I am of that era, I was there in the 60s and I was a victim of this, in fact. And, you know, I think a lot of people never really got out of it. And I think that what I'm concerned with, of course, is that this was simply a wave or even a large-scale experimentation for something even bigger and more controlling. And I think that one reason why people really want to follow up on this article with more research, and we're appealing to scholars and the public to help us, is that the current financial crisis has the earmarks, in my mind, of another project by the oligarchs. And so we could well be on the cusp of a kind of a general financial disaster that will just take essentially the whole culture into this neo-feudalistic condition.
Facilitate the dark age.
Yeah, the new dark age that they had done experiments with in the late 60s. I mean, if you look at what happened, you can trace a lot of the experimentations that MKUltra was doing from individuals to groups, and there's documentation showing they even went to towns, to larger groups. So then you have all these individuals that were in that MKUltra. Ken Kesey, Robert Hunter, who's in The Grateful Dead. There was another member of The Grateful Dead that was involved. But so you now are simply telescoping up in terms of this experimentation, and you're now doing experimentation in a very large scale. What is the end result of all this, I'm afraid, is really neo-feudalism. That's really, I think, maybe what they had in mind, but hopefully we can prevent this.
Well, you know, can I
interject something
Sure.
here? First of all, I'd like to cite an example of what you're talking about the communes there. In New Zealand, there's a poet named James K. Baxter, and he had like a big house, and there were copious quantities of hippies and all of these kind of people tripping out in the house. The cops would frequent it pretty much every day, and I met one of these people who was actually in that house with James K. Baxter back in the day. And she was telling me things like, "Oh, everything's coming down. There's no point in trying to resist it. I have encouraged my children to never have children because people are a toxin, cancer on the planet,
exactly.
So on and so forth." This is the damage that we talk about, because you referred to yourself, Joe, as a victim of this particular sect of people. How could you call yourself a victim if you have not been somehow damaged by it? And I was wondering what your perception is.
It's because my life was taken in a direction that was not to my benefit. I was, like many people my age, I took these drugs. I was exposed to these philosophies. And it took me a decade or so to essentially reverse this and try to get back into what I think are the real world. This was really just an epidemic condition. All of us, all of my generation, had some kind of negative effects in hindsight, having been exposed to all these things. And so I would, you know, just give another example. there's a book called A Course in Miracles, which was the progenitor of the New Age religions. And it was the first book that described channeling. There were these two individuals that were able to communicate with Jesus Christ. One of them, essentially, a scientist, a psychologist, was communicating with Christ. And then they produced a book called
Helen Schuckman,
which then, you know, produced what became the New Age religion phenomena, which is still with us very much. Well, those two scientists who produced A Course in Miracle have now been exposed as having been MKUltra employees. And I don't mean a rumor or a suggestion or something. I'm talking about absolutely exposed. Even now, on their own websites, they are trying to do damage control, giving explanations that are completely implausible, as implausible as the absurd philosophy that they were spinning out to people. So what you see is MKUltra is very broad, and it was really looking for ways to control. It was looking for those kinds of phenomena that on a large cultural scale would enable people to be easy to control. So this was what we were a victim of. And there are different kinds of victims. I had, you know, my problems, which were not certainly unusual or particularly severe. In fact, I hate to say it, but I kind of enjoyed the era. I had a good time in it, lots of it. But if you look at the article, one of the individuals who had been done experiments, brain experiments in the MKUltra projects, posts, gave us a letter testifying to what had happened to him with a tremendous amount of documentation. So that's another level of what a victim to this this project was like.
Let me add something, Joe. You know, and you had mentioned this guy or this person that you met that was
James K. Baxter,
and you know, talking about all of the pollution and not having children or anything like that, and telling their kids not to. This is actually the plan. The plan of the Dark Ages is, you know, partially eugenics and humanism, and getting people to not reproduce, and especially, you know, the middle class kids who are the most likely to do well. It's about dumbing them down. It's about making them feel guilty for all of the problems that the corporations and the oligarchs have created, and telling them, not to reproduce, but breaking down the family unit itself through Planned Parenthood, through feminism. There's a Canadian woman. You should interview her if you haven't before. Her name is Karen. She has a YouTube channel, Girl Writes What, and she's spent years investigating and exposing the feminism, going through all of the history of it and revealing that it's a complete fraud. So, you know, they use these attacks to destroy and break down the family unit, get kids to have wild sex, single moms and things like that are reliant upon the state, therefore, instead of a family unit. And so these are all different attacks. And when you get into the research, like on my last paper that I released in August, I talked about George Hunt's work, who exposed the UNSAID conferences back in the 90s. And George Hunt, I had him on my show, and he's got a documentary out that he actually released 20 years ago that didn't get traction until the last couple of years, exposing this. But In his video, he exposes the Fourth World Wilderness concept. And the Fourth World is essentially the battle for the mind. We have the First World, which is the U.S. and Canada and Europe. We have the Second World, which is Asia and Russia, essentially. And then the Third World, which is Africa, South America. And then the Fourth World, which is the battle for the mind. And so, you know, this is all of these things that come together in the Fourth World, under the Fourth World concept. And you can hear Edmund de Rothschild discuss this himself in George Hunt's video, because George Hunt was at the conference with Rothschild. But you can hear these guys all discuss their plans for selling all of this New Age spirituality and everything to get people to essentially accept this New World Order agenda. So the New Dark Age, the New World Agenda, you know, Terrence McKenna admits in one of his books. I don't remember if it was it's Archaic Revival, but he says in there that his definition of the Archaic Revival is just a renaming of the New Age to put it in historical context. And in other words, historical context is a neo-Dark Age as to the old Dark Age, right? They're, you know, the Archaic Revival. Get us to return to the status of peasants, go back to the teepees and the communes, where the elites and oligarchs can control all of us, and we go willingly. Like Aldous Huxley said in one of his articles, he says, "I believe that the world's rulers will discover that infant conditioning and narco-hypnosis are more efficient as instruments of government than clubs and prisons." And then he goes on suggesting people into loving their servitude as by flogging and kicking them into obedience. You know, so this is exactly the agenda. And it turns out that, you know, as I mentioned earlier, Aldous Huxley was a member of the Century Club with Alan Dulles and Gordon Wasson and these guys. But he is expounding this agenda that they want to get everybody through drugs. Essentially, what they do is they sell the drugs as a spiritual agenda, and you experience them and you have an amazing experience, but you don't see the dark side that they can be used for, and this is where they catch people with it. You know, you might see this as spiritual, but they see you as in a dream state, in a hypnotic sleep where they can control you.
Yeah, Vinny, let me just give you a real-time example of this, because I actually saw this. So you have a guy named Edward Bernays, who is Sigmund Freud's nephew. He's a double nephew. His mother is Freud's sister, and his father is the brother of Freud's wife. I mean, he's a double nephew, very, very inbred family. So Freud is discovering in the beginning of the 20th century that repressed sexuality is essentially the mortar of civilization. You need to have some repression of sexual impulse in order to, or what he calls sublimation, in order to delay gratification and produce civilization and have technologic power. And so his nephew Bernays starts essentially unraveling all of this. He uses the insights that Freud has developed exactly the opposite as you would imagine him to do. And he does it, in my opinion, simply because they know how to unravel civilization. So what one of the first thing he does is he creates these music idols. But he also brings highly sexualized dancing to America. He actually promoted Nijinsky, who was a ballet guy who exposed himself on stage as part of his act. And this is very early in the 20th century. So you can imagine all of the outrage this guy was
caused. It caused riots.
But Bernays kept saying, no, this is art. Expansion thing. Anyway. So now let's go forward 50 years. You have another guy exposing himself on stage. You have Jim Morrison of The Doors, right? You know, he's famous for exposing himself in these highly sexual lyrics. But he also...
Joe, we got a break.
Yeah, we do.
Okay, well, okay.
Here's a good cliffhanger. Here's a good cliffhanger, ladies and gentlemen. When we come back, we'll talk more about Jim Morrison exposing himself and the Doors of Perception at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand. And I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Welcome back.
I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The show that goes everywhere, man, because, hey, there's a whole lot of world of information that most people would just never encounter in their life. And I think one of my quests in life is to learn as much as I can about all sorts of different things. You know, so I know a lot of stuff, but just a little bit about it. I'm probably not going to be overly specialized in a terribly large amount of things. Now, back into our subject, we were talking about Jim Morrison's Wang. Joe, would you continue?
Right. I'll just finish this up briefly because I don't want to make, you know, this too long a deal. But so when Morrison sings The End, he has essentially an exposition of what's called the Oedipal Complex, which was a discovery of Sigmund Freud, that where, according to Freud, the young men wish to kill their fathers so that they can have sex with their mothers. Now, the repression of this impulse was part of the mortar that produced civilization, according to the Freudian theory. Bernays, his nephew, brings Nijinsky to the U.S. Nijinsky starts the essentially debasing of music and entertainment performances by exposing himself. So then roll forward 50 years and you have Jim Morrison exposing himself, and then you have him also singing essentially about the Oedipal Complex. He describes a young man who, you know, kills his father, and then even though he doesn't describe it, he lets everyone know that he's going to have intercourse with his mother after having executed his father. Now, if you look at all of this, you'll see that this is the reflection of a very, very small group of people, that the Oedipal Complex is coming direct from the lineage of Freud and Bernays. Morrison's behavior on stage is very reflective of Bernays. And the drugs that everyone is taking while they're watching this are coming from Gordon Wasson's lineage, that who was an extremely close friend and associate of Edward Bernays. And so the actual long-term goal of all of this, in my mind, is simply the single mother, because that would be the condition under which the oligarchs knew that they would have the most debased power level of the children that were being produced, that single moms simply would have just such a hard economic time.
They're totally reliant upon the state at that
right,
point, which is totally the situation in England.
And so now here we are, 40 years after the Sunset Strip. Single moms are epidemic. The family structure has been pretty well shattered. And suddenly this worldwide economic crisis looms. And we culturally are going to have a hard time resisting it, because we don't have the community and specifically the family structure in place that you would need to be independent of the state. So that's the pattern I see.
Well, I do see that pattern as well. A persistent de-fathering complex, traditional benefits from the state being directed towards the mother, position of the children, and so on and so forth.
This is why, you know, Karen of Girl Writes What that I mentioned earlier, that's why her work is so important, because she exposes the entire foundation of this thing. And I mean, it's literally destroyed the backbone of England, where men no longer want to participate in marriage or in the workplace because they get nothing out of it. They're taxed for their money to go to the women, and they're not included in a part of the entire society, essentially. So men are dropping out of British society by, you know, the tens of thousands and refusing to participate. And so many women have this entitlement complex from the feminist movement, which Karen exposes, that, you know, you see all of this stuff, and then it's, you know, you start putting the pieces together, and it's, you know, as we say in the article, it's not one thing. You have to look at all of these different things to see the bigger picture. If you just look at feminism, or just look at the psychedelic movement, or just look at the destruction of the family unit, you don't see it. You have to step back and see all of these things together, and all of these things combined are the Fourth World Wilderness Agenda and the attack on the mind. And in fact, I'm just trying to pull it up here. It's going to take a second, but there was even a book written about this attack on the mind. Anyway, it's going to take me just a second here to pull it up, which I'm forgetting
now. Can I make a point while you're looking for that? It's about trauma-based mind control. Now, going through bad trips and things of that nature, that's trauma. And whatever trauma you suffer has a huge effect on the mind, doesn't it? And sure. So if you're encouraging people to take things that could be potentially traumatic and you're making sure that they're listening to music, which is potentially hypnotic, you've definitely got at least some effect to draw on there.
And the idea is, the idea also is, people listen to Terrence McKenna, et cetera, and then they have these notions of what the experience is going to be like when they go in. And it's sort of like a pre-programming before they even go into the experience. So then when they come out, they have all of these new age ideas rather than using something like the trivium, which is grammar, logic, and rhetoric, and who, what, where, when, why, and how to fact check everything. Then what they're left with is channeling from the Pleiades and Uranus and all of these different places where they're just going to get information from. And then anybody who has real information is dismissed, kill the messenger type thing. And truth becomes arbitrary and it's entirely dismissed. And then they'll argue that there is, in fact, no truth. You can't know anything. 1 + 1 isn't 2. When you walk out of the grocery store, your car is never going to be in the same parking spot twice.
If that happens, then you have a deconstruction of like what we talked about earlier, Joe. You said getting back into the real world where your actions have consequences. You can plan, you can make things happen, you can invent, you can create, so on and so forth. And I think what this does is it creates a despondency between the real world and the perception world. And it brings the perception forward into the front, and then basically everything else falls behind. And you have ineffective citizens who are easy to boss around, don't stand up for themselves.
Right. I mean, they're just working against us in every front imaginable. I mean, once you start looking at the different projects that MKUltra was organizing, you can see that religion, drugs, music, the idea of that relativity in terms of morals, all of these concepts, which essentially weakened what was a family-based middle class, they were producing all of them. And if anyone who goes to Jan's website, Gnostic Media, you can look at the work that Jan has done to show people how they can actually step through the process. And you can see the incredible connectiveness. In other words, you really want to see the relationship between something like Tavistock, the institute that the Freudian followers founded, and Esalen, where you have the New Age religions and drug being promoted. You can see this very small group of individuals' intellectual connections between them, and as they move forward, these ideas spread out. But they're always being created and controlled by these just very few groups of people, and it's sort of like you look at the acid tests that the Grateful Dead would put on, and then you look at the band members, and you see members of the military, MKUltra employees, and individuals who ended up as members of Bohemian Grove, right? Now, how is that possible? How is it possible that, all of these people, right, had such direct connections into these oligarchic clubs and the CIA's mind control project? I just don't believe that anyone who looks at this could ever think that could possibly be circumstance. Not when you look at all, then as you look at all of these things, all of these rock and roll groups, the philosophy that was being spun to teenagers at that time. It just, the individuals that were doing it have just too many direct connections into this shadow government and shadow psychology and MKUltra.
Just let me throw in that book that I was trying to find a minute ago. It's Battle for the Mind by William Sargent, and that's a very important book for people to read if they want to understand these attempts at controlling everyone and the all of the different multi-pronged approach. And just to go over some of the points here, since I've got this fourth world wilderness agenda up on my screen. We can get into like dumbing us down the hidden history of compulsory schooling, such as John Taylor Gatto's work. Joe mentioned Course in Miracles. We have critical thinking, such as the Trivium, removed from public schooling. We have this December 21st, 2012 stuff, destruction of the family and the middle class, destruction, or we have the environmental movement. And not that it's there, we don't need to care for the environment. It's using this, selling carbon and this sort of thing is, you know, negative when carbon is the foundation for all life. And the more carbon there is, the more plants grow, etc. But using it as a sort of tax system to limit people's reproduction. And then feminism, fluoride, the Gaia hypothesis, geoengineering or chemtrails, you know, GMO, neo-shamanism, all of that stuff, UFOs, vegetarianism, and especially people need to stop eating wheat, W-H-E-A-T.
Yeah, absolutely. There's been a lot of studies done on this, and it turns out that the food pyramid that is put out for everybody and the certain amount of cereals and wheats that you're supposed to be eating is precisely the same diet that's recommended when you're fattening up cattle for the slaughter. How interesting. We'll be right back after the break with more dietary requirements at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island procrastination in the sunny slave South Pacific. That's also incidentally very slothful. Not only is it frickin' fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which is good for the economy because now everybody can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guests are Jan Irvin from Gnostic Media and Joseph Atwell, who wrote the book Caesar's Messiah. Guys, welcome back. Now, Jan, you were listing off a whole bunch of different cultural attributes there at the end of it, that there is this very agenda to, in my opinion, what happens with very strong belief structures, things that are based upon morality, for example, they're designed to resist corruption, resist encroachment of other exactly. bad ideas and so on and so forth.
And so what better reason to start this entire psychedelic movement that attacks culture? That's what they're always talking about, how saying how culture is supposedly bad. And I've, you know, heard Terrence McKenna say it hundreds of times in different lectures and things like that. I used to be into his work, right? But the reason why you attack culture is because culture is what keeps the people, or, you know, the tribe or whatever it is, the society, safe from outside attack. And excuse the term tribe, you know, I'm just trying to think, you know, clan might be a better term, because in Europe you still have a lot of clans and things like that that are still in existence. But these are based on a tight, close family unit. I used to live in Yugoslavia. I've spent a lot of time in South America. And, you know, in Europe, the family structure is much different. Like, you know, you have your grandparents live in the front house. You and your parents live in the back house. When the grandparents die, you tear down the grandparents' house and you build a new house there. And then, you know, that's where you raise your kids. And then your parents die in their old house. And then the process repeats itself. And it goes on like this for centuries. You know, if you need a babysitter, you know, your aunts and uncles or grandparents are right there to help in this process. You know, these are real family values. And so it was essential that this type of family be broken down. And first, like, in, you know, in the United States, it's completely gone, because what they did was, in order for people to get house loans in the 1920s or 30s, after World War One or World War Two, could have been the 40s, but people weren't allowed to get home loans if they had extended family, the aunts and uncles and grandparents moving into these locations. So it became just the parents and then the siblings, and then they broke that further down with the feminist movement and these other movements, so that there is essentially for many families, there is no family background there in existence any longer. So you know, if there is an attack on culture, which obviously there is, then there's nothing for these people to fall back on, and no family unit, no group there to support. Whereas in Europe and in South America, you know, the entire civilization could collapse, and a lot of these people wouldn't even be affected because their family unit is such where they, you know, they produce their own food, they have their own cattle, their own, you know, stuff like, you know, so many did in Peru when I was there, and they, you know, just continue on. But, you know, if you do not have that family support, then you're pretty well doomed. So, you know, these attacks on the family and getting people not to have children and, you know, putting kids in the compulsory education system that dumbs them down and all of these things all add in together.
Whoa. What does it add together? Who was going to replace the family? Yeah.
Well, that's the good question. Nobody's going to. That's the problem.
No, I disagree. I think there's going to be a big daddy.
Well, there's a big daddy to a point, but you have to understand that the big daddy is only there as a Dr. Eugenicist who's there to suffocate out those people. right? It's not to continue those people under the government of, or the, under the tit of government in perpetuity. You know, it's to end them and suffocate them out. So that they
Let me get this straight. They try and convince us that we want to kill our fathers in order to have sex with our mothers so that they can kill us and take over the planet.
No, I think that's too
too simplified.
It's not the right way to look at it. I mean, Jan really hit upon the correct you know, kind of understanding is that when you have extended family, it's very, very difficult for government to control. Just think about how much control that extended family, when you really have connection of cousins, and particularly extended families that are linked to other extended families. Okay, then contrast that with the single mom and the who's on welfare, or the single guy who is at bars at night, right? Now, these individuals are simply sitting ducks. Right. They don't have any methods of support other than themselves. And because of the way they operate, they don't really even have much survival skills in themselves, right? So where is this going? This isn't going as it did in the first feudal system to slavery. They don't need these individuals as slaves. What would they do with them? They're absolutely useless. This is going to population reduction. They have softened us up. They have softened culture up
to 21.
That they can now very easily start reducing population dramatically and quickly, and no one will complain and no one will be able to resist because the single mom and the lone wolf bar hopping male just don't really have any connections. Right, that are strong enough for them to survive. They will simply end up, trying to find some way to get food. If you have real hard economic times come about through a designed implosion of the economic system, how are they going to survive? What are they going to do? So this really, I mean, the place we are now culturally, if you look at Europe, New Zealand, you know, the United States, the place we are now is a place we've been brought to. And we weren't brought here to be ruled. We were brought here to be exterminated.
Okay. Well, that's something I've been worrying about quite extensively, Joe, is nobody in their right mind would try and do something like this to society. So it leads me to believe that the people that are doing this really aren't in their right mind. They've literally lost the plot. They've gone mad with power. And there's nothing that will convince them that what they're doing is wrong. They'll keep doing it until they're stopped.
Right. I mean, look, you couldn't do something like produce the psychedelic movement if you are operating under the kind of moral perspective that you're essentially concerned about here, right? If you were at the, just think of all of the millions of people that had, bad psychedelic experiences, right? So if you can demonstrate And I think that the research that we've done is pretty conclusive. If you can demonstrate that a group is planning on this broad scale of destruction, right, then you just don't have to even worry about the next step in terms of population reduction. They've already crossed the line generations ago. There has to be, and this would be something that would be a real focus, I would hope, of the people who take the research seriously, is that they would try to understand who the group is. What keeps them able to be able to not be discovered? How are they able to stay in operation and ruling in many ways, but not be detected? How do they do that? It's very, very frightening, and it people who come to the point that they accept this research as plausible. You don't have to cross the line and say it's these guys are right, but just to the point that it's plausible. Then this is should be a wake-up call of the highest order. You really need to get out there, organize, try to activate your political representatives, try to see if to what extent they can help. We really need to look at what's inside government, because when you see the results of MK Ultra, okay, when you see these results, there is something sick inside government. I mean, really, really sick. So it's powerful, it's pervasive, and it's got to have some sunlight put on it. We hope everyone will join in an effort to try to get this understood.
It's a massive effort, and people have been trying to expose the New World Order / Illuminati / whatever the heck you want to call it, right, agenda for some time. And I believe, based upon my experiences, that the number of people who are aware of this agenda is growing dramatically and exponentially, I think, as well. It's only a matter of time before enough people know about it, before something will be done about it, because everybody is talking about on the radio shows, attempting to tell people, wake up, go do something, go talk to your congressperson.
The problem, Vinny, let me just interject there. The problem, though, is that if you don't include critical thinking in a systematic process like the Trivium Method, people are left just out there doing anything, and then they're controlled opposition, and that's what this is about. You know, it's like the Wall Street protests and all of this stuff. If they study Clint Richardson's work on the CAFR and Walter Burian stuff, then they realize they shouldn't be at, Wall Street. They should be at their local city hall. So it's about getting people to, not attack the or not understand who the real perpetrator of these things is. It's to deflect things like, the elitism and Zionism and a lot of these different things that are actually behind it, and help it to run. I think a big part of the it's certainly CIA, there's certainly Mossad elements in there, and there's a lot of other underground elements in there that need to be exposed. And so if you don't, if you're not able to filter the fallacies out of your mind, if you're not able to gather information and come to certainty or truth with any information, and again, going back to them, selling us this this agenda that there is no truth and there's a mosquito flying in front of me, then, you don't even bother to look with the citations. And if you don't look for the citations, then guess what? You're not going to hit the right target. And so that's the goal, is, you waste all your time over here when the real goal or the real target that you need to deal with is over here. So, just being, somehow awake and politically active and, whacking at the branches instead of covering, cutting the roots out of the problem isn't really effective.
Well, can I ask then, what about simply, say, interviewing you and putting up a video about the Trivium or something of that nature? Even that small contribution, which doesn't take me very long, might actually help, right?
And well, so, sure, but it's also making sure that we don't send mental viruses downstream, and each one of us needs to partake in that. And you know, just taking a few minutes to fact check any new information that we get before we send it downstream. Who, what, where, when, before we determine why or explain how. And so by this simple process, we each help uplift each other and, you know, not send, you know, the green fairy downstream that we can't prove. You know, I've got a green fairy in the corner, I'll sell you for $100 type of thing. And so, you know, it becomes, you know, this is a citation. Yes, I went to this book and I checked it. It is there. Here's the information. You know, and going back to, you know, this dumbing down bit, I, you know, a couple of years ago, I interviewed David Herrmann on my show from the Ayn Rand Institute. And this guy, he does a very detailed breakdown and destruction of quantum physics. And when you include things like quantum physics into the whole picture and realize that it's all about getting people in a sort of scientific matter to believe there is no truth, like, let me explain it this way. If logic is the art of non-contradictory identification, quantum physics would be the art of fitting as many contradictions into one time and space as possible. And so, you know, these physicists that promote this stuff, they don't study logic, and they can't see how absurd so many of their things are. If there is no truth, then like I mentioned earlier, you walk outside and your car is in a different place every time. You go to the grocery store, it doesn't matter what the cashier gives you as change, you just make it up and it's going to be the right change every time. I mean, this is the insanity that is sold. You know, the idea of the secret where you just go out and you know, you're going to think those thoughts and they're going to manifest how you want. And so this is all geared towards that type of thing. Get people to not be active and actually take action with your hands and words and getting real political movements going. Go over there, pillow sit, and be positive, and that's going to be your way to get active, right? You know, laziness and sitting and doing nothing is then portrayed as actually being active.
I think there's a long wake-up process because you go through an education system, you go through your perception blockers and things like that throughout life, then you start to become exposed to the information. And it takes a number of years before you've even got any kind of grasp onto it before you can go ahead and start doing anything in a lot of cases. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's interesting. Jan and I are actually going to do a seminar in... you know, decoupling yourself from mind control. We've talked about this for some time, that having studied how it is developed, we believe that we can actually give value to people to leave the effects behind. And obviously, a reason, and particularly reason grounded in the five senses and logic, are key. But then you also have to have just some basic pillars of understanding. I mean, you have to turn off the mainstream media because obviously it's long since been controlled by the oligarchs, and the entire thing is just a system of mind control. And I do want to throw in a plug for you, Vinny. I think that the people that are using the internet to create alternative thinking and perspective on the news are really doing a tremendous service, because Jan is absolutely correct. If their mind is not working correctly, they're not going to do anything useful with the information. But they do, to get their mind working clearly, they have to go through a process. And the very first step is to wake up to the fact that there has been this attack upon their mind, and that they are their own victims. So often, you know, people have been turned into thought puppets, where they defend the very concept that is the most destructive to their well-being.
That's right. Yeah. You know, and let me just add real quick, Vinny, that you know, it's very important that people study the logical fallacies so that they can spot when they're lying to themselves and when others are lying to them.
Right.
Yeah. All right, realize, realize, realize. We'll be right back.
Bonkers.
Oh,
and all I care about is sex and violence. Every baseline is my kind of silence. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We are left now with Jan Ervin. We're left with Jan Ervin, like the dregs, because Joe has had a family emergency, and he had to go. Now,
Speaking of extended family, right?
Yeah, synchronicity. I like that stuff. Now, we were talking about the Doors, right? You know, father, yes, son, I want to kill you. Mother,
right. The Oedipal complex.
Okay, and you think about the defathering agenda. You think about Planned Parenthood, which used to be called the Americans Eugenic Society.
Yeah, well, sure,
Hold on. You think about free love and birth control. You think about eugenics, right? And then you think about trauma-based mind control and going through all this stuff, what kind of effect it has on you, what kind of effect it has on your culture, and how much it damages people's self-confidence to know that the system's against them in a lot of ways and stops them from actively inventing things and stops them from really making a contribution to society because they're too busy listening to music that puts them in a trance.
Well, one of Terence McKenna's quotes, I think, from Archaic Revival, it could be an invisible landscape, but he says that he wants all innovation and new inventions to stop for 1,000 years.
Yeah.
They want to stop everything and literally turn us into cave people.
It's getting outside their control. We've got the technology now to beat them and expose them, don't we? They created a monster.
Here's the problem is, it took us 58 years to figure this agenda out for our paper that we put out this week and getting documents from the CIA, going through all of these university archives and putting this stuff together. I mean, the fact that that Gordon Wasson, for instance, who is running MKUltra Subproject 58, got on and nobody bothered to check this guy's background for 50 some odd years. I mean, how does that happen? How could all of these scholars in the field just be so incompetent? And so that's really the real issue here is that, people need to learn to put grammar before logic. They need to ask who, what, where, and when before they determine why or how. Just because Wasson and the CIA says that James Moore was the CIA plant and that's the real story doesn't mean that that's the real story. You have to go and actually get documents and look through things and read things and find out for yourself. And, people will go through their entire lives believing lies and myths because they don't spend 10 or 20 minutes or even a few days to fact check things. And so, they'll say, well, I just don't have the time. Well, how do you have the time to dedicate your entire life to some lie and not a few hours or a few minutes to fact check it?
Oh, yeah. Stick that one in your pipe and smoke it, scholarly business. Mm-hmm. Have you ever noticed that university no longer teaches critical thinking? It teaches people Absolutely. How to be critical of other people.
Well, we'll get this. I've actually had people from other shows and stuff trying to debate me and tell me that you cannot use logical fallacies to filter your own thoughts, that it's only for debate. You can't use it to filter information coming in like in TV commercials or what, the president is saying on TV. You can only use it in debate. Never mind that traditionally it was always used for all of these things, to filter your own thoughts, to catch the fallacies, and the word fallacy comes from Latin fallare, to lie. So, if we don't catch the lies in our own thoughts, before we send them downstream, not only how they affect other people, but what about how these lies affect us? And then on top of this, we're sold all of this quantum physics stuff that there is no truth, and you may as well not even bother. Just go live in a delusion, right? And so, part of regaining your self-esteem and your self-confidence back and taking power back from all of this is learning to fact-check things, learning that, when you're reading a book and there's a mention, somebody's name or a citation, go look it up. Go spend a few minutes to look it up. Or if it's in another book, I buy books all the time that are cited in other books, and I'll follow the whole trail out. I've written entire books, like my book, The Holy Mushroom, and the attacks on John Allegro that I published in 2008. All of the attacks against this Dead Sea Scrolls scholar that said that Judeo-Christianity was based on a mushroom fertility cult, all of the attacks against him were started by Gordon Wasson, who we found out was CIA. And if it wasn't for beginning to research John Allegro's background and the whole story of all of these attacks against him back in 2006, it would have never led us here to exposing MKUltra Subproject 58. It was because we went in and said, okay, well, Gordon Wasson is saying all of these things about Allegro. Well, let's just fact check each thing that Allegro actually said. And then when we laid them all out in a list, literally every single claim against Allegro that was made by Wasson and the other ethnomycologists was a lie. Every single one we verified.
The depth of lies can be virtually infinite, I found. So this is how we made a point before. Can I just finish this point? Because we talked about before about how could all these people be in operation for so long without people knowing about it or exposing it or whatever. And I think it's actually rather simple. They'd simply control all the investigation paradigms. So if you were to go to a police officer or something of that nature, there'd probably be a cop that's higher than him that is in some way in the employ. And then he would simply close down the... Well, you put people in key positions that are the ones who would decide whether or not investigations go through, things of that nature. Then there's the politicians and things. You can actually really keep a lid on things relatively easy with a small amount of people in key positions.
But what's the first step? Vinny, you're a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
You know, they attack you, they attack your person, they'll ridicule you and cause all of these things to try and... First of all, make you feel crazy so that you don't pursue it. And then if that doesn't work, then they'll send their lapdogs in to attack you publicly so that it tries to frighten other people away from looking at your work. And this is why logic and the fallacies is so important, because when they say, you know, this person is a conspiracy theorist, therefore you don't listen to anything he says, you say, oh, well, that's an ad hominem attack. That's the same as name calling. You're a Republican, or you're a homosexual, or you're a Christian, or you wear pink shirts on Fridays. Therefore, anything you say is invalid. That's, of course, absolutely ridiculous. But this is the sort of nonsense that many people think with. And so, you know, or an appeal to ridicule, you know, I heard in my psychology class that conspiracy theorists have a psychological problem, you know, and it's like, well, I heard that people who create boxes to put, you know, and categories to put people in without fact-checking things are actually intellectually bankrupt. And that's the real problem here is, you know, they put their logic before their grammar. Rather than seeing and looking at the information that you're presenting, they attack you. They have a category or a box for you. So, you know, this is all part of the game. You know, and it's
I
on
use
top
word
of
play. So if somebody calls me a conspiracy theorist, I go, yes, I am a conspiracy theorist. I believe that powerful people who have a lot of influence use their influence to gain more power.
Well, but see, you know, I mean, it's not really a theory. I mean, when you get into it and you begin to use citations like we have with the MKUltra Subproject 58 stuff, you know, we have CIA primary documents. It's fact. So why call it a theory when it's something that you can prove with original primary documents beyond any doubt? See?
Original primary documents, which would also include that Richard Nixon, and I also believe the precursor to the CIA, came up with the term conspiracy theorist as a method of discriminating against people.
Well, sure, of course. It's all PR. You know, they're always using ad hominem attacks and things like this to attack the man rather than the information. They want to discredit you and not get people to look at the information. And people fall for this stuff all the time. You know, you see it on Fox News in the U.S. and, you know, they'll sit there, oh, well, you know, this guy's a conspiracy theorist. That's so ridiculous. How stupid. These people have a mental problem. They see conspiracies. Tin hat. You know, and they'll just sit there and they'll go on like this. And this is to berate the person and get the audience to just laugh and dismiss the information without ever once looking at it. And this is one of the ways that mind control works. So, you know, whenever you hear a politician or somebody name calling to dismiss information, rather than, you know, you agreeing with that attack, that should be your cue to say, oh, that was an ad hominem attack. I need to actually fact check what this was person was saying and ignore this name calling, you know, because, you know, kids in the sandbox, they name call. And I mean, you know, why would any thinking adult think that a fallacy, especially like name calling, is a valid argument? But, you know, I get people all of the time that will attack my research and say, well, you're a conspiracy theorist. Well, or, you know, you've just gone crazy. Well, which points of my research are wrong? Can you show me which citations are wrong? And of course, they've never even read the work. They don't have a single point that they can provide you that's wrong. And if they do have one single point, it very rarely affects the overall thesis. You know, and nobody who's actually read the work is going to make an attack like that. They're going to make, you know, a single point statement that we can both learn and grow from, so that we both gain from it. We don't name call. It's not a playground.
I was once in a public meeting about the health, and I brought up the fluoride debate, and an old lady comes up to me afterwards and said, you know, before fluoride, well, everybody had terrible teeth, and you're wrong. And then she just walks off without even wanting to debate it. You know, it's just that I'm dumb, I don't listen, and I don't want to investigate, so I'm just going to make a one-word statement because that's about all I can muster, and then get the heck out of there before I can be proven wrong because I'm so afraid of it.
Sure. Well, and not only that, but right around the time the fluoride was put in the water, you know, dental hygiene and things starts going up. People start brushing their teeth. They have running water. So at the same time, you know, so what they do is they hide all of these things. But then it's Edward Bernays who actually sold this whole thing. And there's a really good video online. And let me see if I can find it here. But it's from like the 1950s. And it's, you know, it's up on archive.org, but, you know, we have it linked there. It's like a 5-minute video, and they show them applying fluoride to the nervous system and just watching the entire thing fall dead. You know, fluoride is very, very poisonous. And another thing that people don't realize is that Prozac is made from fluoride. I forget the chemical name of Prozac, but it's like fluorine or fluoride. And so, you know, people don't realize that fluoride in the water, just like Prozac, if you're taking Prozac and it dumbs you down and lulls you and makes you feel good about everything and getting screwed by the government and all this crap that's going on, which is the real, you know, half the reason why they give people this stuff is to make you go back to sleep. You know, if people realize that all of that stuff is in the water and being given us in this multi-pronged attack, the wheat you eat, the high carbo diet, the low fat diet that they, you know, that the doctors all tell you, you know, more and more evidence is coming out all the time that the low fat thing is the cause of Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, that wheat causes schizophrenia and the other mental problems. So you get on the low fat, high carbo, high wheat, high, you know, whole grain wheat, supposedly good for you. And it's wreaking havoc.
Advertising to the public for medical products like drugs. I just saw the first one that I've ever seen on New Zealand television last night, Jan. Okay. Advertising medication for schizophrenia.
Wow. Well, get this. I mean, you know, back in like the mid 90s, I forget when, maybe 2000-ish, it used to be illegal here in the U.S. for pharmaceutical companies to run commercials. So then, of course, you know, you get back scratching going on and all of this nonsense, circle jerk. And then, so for the last 10 years, we have pharmaceutical commercials on television. So it's not, you know, the doctor saying, you know, maybe we can try this medication for this specific problem and working on it. It's patients walking into doctor's office and demanding medications.
Kind of like advertising a Barbie to a small child and then getting that small child to nag the parent. Instead, you get the parents to nag the doctor.
Right. And meanwhile, the low-fat, high-wheat, high-grain diet is probably the cause of 50% plus of the health problems out there. You know, people are running on carbos instead of fats. They're told, you know, the The whole thing is just upside down. Last year, year and a half ago, I interviewed Dr. William Davis, who's the author of the best-selling book Wheat Belly. And he exposes the entire agenda behind weed and how it's just literally a poison, and not just for the people who are allergic to it, but, you know, two slices of bread raises your insulin levels more than a tablespoon of sugar. So they feed children before school a bowl of cereal with sugar on it. So you have wheat that is sugar with sugar on top. And here, Sally run off to school now. And then at lunch, we give them a sandwich with wheat after school, maybe a burger or whatever they have. And, you know, so then, or pasta or something. And then, you know, so they get a whole day filled with wheat and all of this stuff that they can't process. And wheat has dramatic effects on the ability to think. Most people, when they stop eating wheat, for instance, after about the first week to 10 days, most people report it's like a cloud being lifted off their brains.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, because a cloud of advertisements is rolling in at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Wrapping up here, talking about LSD, the agenda to destroy the family unit in order to control, and then, well, basically exterminate society. What are the conclusions behind the use of psychedelics and hallucinogens? Should people not be taking them?
Well, that's actually where Joe and I differ in our conclusions. I'm an ethnomycologist, and I've studied psychedelics for more than 20 years. I've published books on them. I've taken them literally many hundreds of times. And after having studied the trivium method for several years, and in hindsight, and seeing how fallacies alone can be used to control someone, never mind all of these other mind control techniques, but just not having a systematic process like the trivium method, and just not having a firm study in logical fallacies, is enough to control anyone, whether or not they've taken LSD or mushrooms or not. And many people think that because they got high, that they're then free, you know, because they had a breakthrough experience. And it's not that easy. And so, you know, my personal position is that you should only take them after a very thorough study of the trivium and of the logical fallacies, so that if, you know, when you have people trying to take advantage of you, that you are able to spot it. When you know the logical fallacies by heart, you can spot most attempts at people trying to fool you or lie to you or trick you or manipulate you. And this is very important. Whereas Joe's position is that you shouldn't do them at all. And, you know, we've both done psychedelics. I've done them, like I said, many hundreds of times. I've got quite a lot of experience with many different psychedelics. And today, in hindsight, you know, and seeing all of the rabbit holes that I went down that were misleading through this, you know, fourth world wilderness agenda, and through the new dark age, archaic revival propaganda out there, it's a very dangerous thing for people to do without a systematic method of critical thinking. And when a lot of the elites did them in the past, it was only after they had gone through trivium and quadrivium training. And so, you know, there's actually two forms of the trivium, essentially. There's the trivium method and the classical trivium. And the classical trivium is used to capture and enslave the mind, to encircle it, whereas the trivium method exposes that. And so, you know, until you're at a point when you can tell the difference between the trivium method and the classical trivium, and how it's being, you know, how it's being, you know, attempted to be used against you or to free you, you probably should not use them. And so, you know, it can be very dangerous, and it's, you know, realize that if you're going to use them, that there are lots of people out there with agendas that want you and your children dumbed down, such as those coming out of the Esalen Institute.
So do the trips actually dumb people down, or is it just a potential if they don't know what they're
doing? It's not that the experience dumbs you down. What happens is that you have something that's a profound experience and you take it as spiritual. Okay, and that very may well be a spiritual experience, but the other guy who's sitting there taking advantage of the situation see it as something that puts you into, you know, what's that old book, not Rumpelstiltskin, the other one where, you know, the guy eats something, falls asleep under a tree, and years later he wakes up. I'm forgetting
Jack
the story.
Jack and the Beanstalk?
No, it's one of those, though. It's, Rumpelstiltskin, I can't think of it anyway.
What's the moral of the story?
Well, the moral of the story is, you know, this guy falls asleep and he's in this slumber for years and he's taken advantage of by all these gnomes or whatever in this other world, and he wakes up and everything's, you know, completely changed and different. But, you know, what you see as a spiritual experience, they see as getting you into a slumber or getting you into the state of positive thinking and not fact-checking and into believing only the spiritual world and not the reality we live in. Their goal is to get you off balance and only believe in that world and not, you know, vast face. Like in the Kabbalah, there's vast face and small face. And, there's a balance between the two so that you can live in harmony with things. And if you're just positive thinking and not looking at so-called negative things, well, here's a news flash. Just because something is new or information doesn't make it negative. How do you judge whether something is supposedly negative that you haven't even looked at yet? You know, this is what we call killing the messenger. This is ignorance. And when you ignore something by choice and choose not to look at it before you've actually taken in and see what it said, that is the definition of ignorance.
Also, on this note, I've been to countless protests, and I have been told not to yell so loud through the megaphone or to change my message or tell me that I'm wrong or something of that nature. People telling me to stop calling the Prime Minister a scumbag. And as to say that if I call the Prime Minister a scumbag through a megaphone, all I'm doing is really saying that I'm a scumbag, that I'm projecting something. This is insane.
Yeah, this is the type of logic that the reverse psychology that they want to use on us, that there is no truth and, you know, let's muddy everything sort of nonsense. And it's really damaging. Just because you call somebody a thief doesn't mean they're not a thief, right? And so, you know, it's just a common tactic, and it's, you know, they're using a fallacy to attack you and, you know, say, oh, well, if you're saying those negative things, you're projecting. So what they're doing is they're essentially just using this to attack you instead of your message. But, you know, another thing that we have to be careful of, and I used to run protests for a long time, is that protests in many ways can be used, again, as group psychology rather than having a lot of individuals standing as a man and going to the court and taking your freedom back, for instance, from your corporate, you know, personhood and whatnot. You know, you're standing there as a group, so then they can control you as a group. And another issue with protests is that they usually tend to focus on single or several issues that sort of whack at the branches but never really get down to the core issue. And so, you know, this is why the trivium is so important and getting people to wake up and understand the core foundations that are the problem so that, you know, we're not whacking at the branches. We can uplift everyone and empower people with, you know, critical thinking and filter the fallacies out of their thoughts or the lies out of their own thoughts and see the lies coming in so that then we're not wasting our time talking about nonsense. Then we can focus on real solutions and, you know, real problems. As long as we're focused on fantasy and things that we don't verify before we send downstream, you know, we're wasting all of those people's time with nonsense thoughts instead of real solutions.
What about the creative process? If these bands, for example, had not taken LSD, would the music have been so much different?
Well, it probably, you know, would have been different. And I went to, you know, 7 or 8 Dead shows. And as is often said, you know, well, I never liked the Grateful Dead until I took LSD or something. I mean, you know, if the music sucks that bad that you have to be completely out of your mind to enjoy it, you know, it's kind of funny. You know, I mean, it's like, well, you know, that's true, you know, but, you know, and then I went back and then eventually I got high enough to like the music, right? And so, you know, it's like, did I condition myself to finally like it or what? But, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I remember what Bill Hicks said about this, you know, if you want drugs to be illegal, go home, get all your records, all your CDs, all your tapes, and just burn them,
because
all
burn
of those
them, sure.
artists, you know.
Well, sure. You know, and that's, you know, Bill Hicks is often quoted in that regard, and sure, there may be some truth to that, and there may not be. How much of that agenda is just being sold to dumb people down? But, you know, if, you know, like, for instance, when you study the trivium and quadrivium, the quadrivium is arithmetic, geometry, music, and astronomy. Arithmetic is number in itself. Geometry is number in space. Music is number in time. And astronomy is number in space and time. And when you study that, you actually have a core foundation of music itself. So imagine, rather than, you know, creating a bunch of drug musicians, give them the tools of the trivium and quadrivium and the foundations of how, you know, chords and strings and all these were invented and where it all comes from, so that they no longer rely on the music teacher, and then see what sort of music develops, you know. And so, you know, when people have a true music talent, it's like, if you go back and you think of like the a cappella in the 1920s and 30s and 40s in the U.S., versus not all, but much of today's rap music. And you look back at that stuff, and I mean, it's just amazing music, whereas a lot of the rap, and I'm not saying all of it, but a lot of the rap, a lot of the gangster rap, crime, you know, there's not a whole lot of depth to this music. And so, you know, there's a bit of that, you know. We need to go back to a real education and getting real meaning in things, and not this whole debasing of culture on every level.
Yeah. Well, if people want real music, you've got to be a real musician. But a real musician isn't necessarily one that is in a school of music, you know.
Well, and that's the difference between the trivium and the quadrivium is not about a school. It's about learning how notes and all of these things actually were developed and what they all do and what they mean. And so we actually have a real understanding through the origins, where the ancients, wherever they were, how they created this stuff. And when we have that, then we can work forward.
Yeah. Jan Irvin is my guest, ladies and gentlemen. Moving forward, you can check him out at, is it GnosticMedia.com?
It is, and TriviumEducation.com as well.
All right. Now, just think about a three-piece band called Trivium. To get the music.
Well, there's already a Trivium band out there, but don't forget to mention Joe Atwell's site as well.
Oh, yes, that's right. Is it CaesarsMessiah.com?
Well, Caesar's Messiah is his book. I don't remember the name. He's also got a new video out, Caesar's Messiah, The Roman Conspiracy to Invent Jesus. I apologize, Joe, for not remembering the name or your website address off the top of my head. Google it everyone. Joe Atwell, A-T-W-I-L-L.
All right, Joseph Atwell, Fire Atwell. We'll be right back tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen.